Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. Now, a quick reminder before we get into the podcast is that nothing in this podcast should be taken on as personal financial advice. If you're ever unsure about your finances or investing, make sure you reach out to a qualified financial advisor. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back to yet another episode of the Young Investors Podcast. Hey, Mish Hodder, what's going on, my friend?
Just, we're a couple of days away from heading over to Omaha, where you have to take, how many flights are you taking? 1, 2, 3, and I'm taking 4 flights, right?
I think I might catch the train to Sydney. I don't know if I'll fly to Sydney. Yeah. I might catch the train. Yeah.
At least you have that option.
That's true.
So. I don't think. There is a train, right, from Melbourne to Sydney, but
probably.
Is there? I guess there is.
Who knows?
But anyway, I'm
not
flying.
Not that I'd ever take it.
Well, I think considering we're already getting 3 other flights, I think adding a very long train journey into that is probably not a good idea.
It's over a day of travel time each way, so I'm not particularly keen on doing anything that makes it longer. Hamish, first a few days away and we'll be heading over to Omaha. We'll be jetting off from Sydney, and I think we go, I can't even remember now. Where do we go, Hamish? We go LA, and then we go Minneapolis, and then we go Omaha, and then are there. So if you're going along, definitely find us and say hello. I mean, probably best place to follow us would be on our Instagram, to see like the behind the scenes and where we're at and that kind of stuff. We'll be doing a lot of stuff on our YouTube channels, obviously, but probably more for the day-to-day stuff. Instagram's the place to follow us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'll probably do a podcast episode, I guess, probably 1 or 2 days after we land. So we should have a podcast episode leading up into the meeting, and then we will have one to kind of break down everything that happened after as well. So
so stay tuned. There's going to be a lot of stuff happening. If you see us there, come up, say hello. We'd love to meet you guys. For today, we better get stuck into it, Hamish.
Yes,
we got a lot to cover because it's earnings season. It comes around 4 times a year, and it's come around once again, Hamish. So what are we talking about today?
Yeah, we've got we've got a little bit of economic news that we'll kind of briefly go through. We've got some from Australia, out of Australia and out of the US. And then we've got earnings from the big tech giants, Google, Meta Platforms. We've got Tesla, I think, right? And we'll also take a look at Chipotle. I thought we'd chuck Chipotle back in the mix again.
We're going back in time to our chats about the old Chipotle.
Right.
Perfect. Yeah. Sounds good. Bring back that fossil.
Exactly. Dig up that relic.
Yeah.
Well, with that said, today's episode is brought to you by Seeking Alpha, your one-stop shop for stock analysis, market data, and news. Access expert analysis and news for thousands of stocks. View buy, hold, and sell ratings from members, Wall Street analysts, and Seeking Alpha's own algorithm. Screen for stocks using a variety of fundamental and technical analysis metrics. Access 10 years of financial data and company filings. And manage your portfolio by tracking your investments with price alerts so you never miss a buying opportunity again. Click the link in the episode description or head directly to seekingalpha.me/younginvestors to try Seeking Alpha free for 7 days.
So, Hamish, not that we cared all that much about macroeconomics and that kind of stuff, but there was a little bit of macroeconomic news during the week. Yes. I see you've noted some stuff down. Do you want to take us through that first?
Yeah, so there was kind of 2 fairly important pieces of economic data that I thought we'd just kind of go through quickly because they're pretty meaningful. But out of the US, from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, we got the first quarter of 2024 GDP numbers to kind of see, take a view of the last quarter and see how the US economy has been growing. Real GDP growth came in at 1.6% year over year. So it's a kind of year over year figure. Compared to 3.4% recorded last quarter. So a pretty significant slowdown in economic growth. And that number also came in quite a bit below where some analysts were expecting. Wall Street Journal, for example, does like a poll of like analysts and that sort of thing. And that poll on average was expecting 2.5% real GDP growth. Okay. So it came in pretty low. The 1.6% increase primarily reflects increases in consumer spending and housing investment, partially offset by a decrease in inventory investments, so businesses spending less to build their inventories. You also had imports that increased, which an increase in imports decreases GDP because it's the kind of the opposite of a country producing something. They're kind of importing from another country that's producing. So those were kind of the main contributors to an economy that it is still growing above inflation, but at a much slower pace than even just a couple of quarters ago.
Yeah, interesting. Real GDP growth. What do they mean when they say real GDP?
So real just means that it's adjusted for inflation. So you have nominal GDP growth, which would just be in today's dollar amounts, how much GDP increased. And then the real figure offsets for inflation. So it's showing you, the reason why it's called real is because it's showing you an actual increase in productivity, an actual increase in what the country is producing. Because obviously if they just produce more, but it's all inflation, then the country is actually not really producing anything new. Okay. So it's
an inclusive, it's all inclusive measure. So, well, that's good. That's good that the economy is growing. See, would that necessarily have an impact on maybe Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve, do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because both stock and bond markets reacted pretty negatively to the release, which is kind of funny because you would think, well, wouldn't slower growth mean that there's a higher chance of rate cuts? So you might think that the markets would actually react positively to that because, you know, also the markets have been seeing higher than expected inflation and then reacting negatively also because they think rates are going to stay higher. So why is
it's
the market
a bit backwards, isn't it?
Yeah. Why is the market taking everything kind of at least the last few kind of results so negatively? And I think the main thing to understand, I guess, is that even if growth is slow, even if economic growth isn't very good, the chance of rate cuts is still pretty low if inflation is still a problem, which it is. And actually, if you have inflation that is just sticky at 3.5%, 4%, and it won't go away, and at the same time you have really low growth or even a negative growth or a decline in economic output, that's like the worst case scenario. So I think that's what the markets are kind of reacting to. They're kind of worrying, oh no, do we have not only kind of a bit of a stickier inflation situation, but also now the economy is slowing and the inflation is still there. And that's a very bad situation if it gets worse. Right now it's fine. I mean, all of the numbers are, they're okay. Like growth is slow, but it's okay. Inflation is a bit higher, but it's not crazy. Everything's just kind of okay.
I can hear Ray Dalio with a particular term on the tip of his tongue.
I was trying not to say it.
We might call it a stagflation.
Oh dear.
Well, there you go. So that's the first bit of news, is it? Then what else have you got?
Yeah, so that's out of the US. Out of Australia, we got the first quarter inflation data. So Australia does both quarterly and month by month inflation. We get both of them now, but regardless, the latest release showed that the consumer price index rose 3.6% year over year to the end of March, which was down from 4.1%, which was recorded last quarter. So our inflation story, again, continues to kind of trend down, but is still, you know, a little bit above where, you know, we would like to see it. Quarterly inflation, so just for the 3 months, was 1%. So that's still a pretty considerable increase of inflation in just 3 months, when ideally the yearly inflation would be around 2%. So 1% is pretty considerable. And then in terms of what are the biggest contributors, rent on an annual basis rose 7.8%, which was the highest since March of 2009. So pretty considerable rate. And that's being driven by extremely low vacancy rates in most major cities. There's less than 1% vacancy in Melbourne, Sydney, and Adelaide and Brisbane. Secondary and tertiary education both rose more than 6% during the quarter, so quarter over quarter. And then medical and hospital services rose 2.3% during the quarter.
Wow.
So
there you go. That's a big rise for rent since highest since March 2009. Crazy. I guess we are seeing that a lot. I mean, myself and Tash are potentially looking at moving to Melbourne later in the year. And there's not a huge amount of availability, and the rents are quite high, Hamish. And you're potentially moving house soon as well, right? So we're all going to be in the same boat.
Yeah, it's a pretty bad renters market. Pretty much wherever you are in Australia, but yeah, Melbourne, Sydney are very bad. There's just no supply, and there's just an enormous amount of demand, and It's a pretty tricky housing renters market at the moment in Australia, and it doesn't really look like it's getting better, unfortunately.
There you go. Anything else on Australian inflation, Hamish?
That's it. That's the story. That's it. So there you go. Cool. Now we can jump into some earnings. Where do you want to start?
You tell me, Hamish. I'm going to talk about the ones I've got to talk about are Meta and also Tesla. So you pick one.
Let's do Meta, and then I'll back it up by doing Google or Alphabet, and we can kind of do the compare and contrast like we normally do.
Okay, cool. Meta's a real interesting one this time around. I had a bit of a laugh because looking at the CNBC article that they put out on Meta earnings, the title of this article was Meta loses $200 billion in value as Zuckerberg focuses earnings call on all the ways the company bleeds cash. That's classic Mark Zuckerberg not reading social cues. It's like Mark, cut Mark's line.
Stop it.
It's kind of funny because the article also notes that Meta reported better than expected profit and revenue figures for the quarter.
Mark gets don't care about that.
He could have just run with it. He could have been like, look at our revenue, look at our gross, look at our profits. This is beautiful. But no, he didn't. No. But anyway. Let's go through the numbers first. So quarter one revenue was $36.5 billion, which is actually up 27% year over year. So quite a strong quarter on the top line. Their costs were only up 6% year over year to $22.6 billion. So pretty good. If you can get your revenues going up 27%, your costs only up 6%, that's a pretty favorable situation for you. So their income from operations was up 91% year over year to $13.8 billion. Their net income was up 117% year over year to $12.4 billion. And, you know, the financial figures looked pretty rosy, Hamish. They looked pretty rosy.
That is absolutely insane. I mean, there's not many businesses that can do a 30% increase in revenue with basically no cost increase, basically. That's pretty insane. Like, you know, most businesses, if their volume of products that they're shipping is going up, they're, you know, the amount of places they need to lease goes up by a lot. The employees go up. The marketing they're doing goes up. Meta, you know, there are some increases, but for the most part, they're just, you know, running ad sales through their platform. Yeah. And if they get more ad sales, great. They make more profit. There's not an enormous amount of kind of direct fixed direct costs associated with an increase in their revenue, which is pretty astounding.
I focus a lot more these days on business model, and I love the software-y kind of business model instead of, say, selling an actual product that has to be made and manufactured and shipped to someone. It's just so much easier if you just sell some sort of software or you have some sort of app that generates advertising revenue, as is the case with Meta. Like Adobe's another example of just a program which is, you know, software which can just be repeatedly sold to lots and lots of people. You don't have to build a new Photoshop every time you make another sale of your Creative Cloud subscription. Yep. So I like looking at that, and you're absolutely right. It's this whole idea of software as a service. So we talked about their financial results. Turning to some more operational statistics, we had family daily active people is now up to $3.24 billion. So it's an increase of 7% year over year. So there's 3.24 billion people in the world that are using one of Meta's apps on a daily basis, which is remarkable, as we always say. Yeah. In terms of their advertising, so advertising is about 98% of Meta's revenue. So it's important to kind of hone in on their on how the ads are shaping up. So ad impressions were up 20% year over year. So a lot, quite a chunk more ad impressions, yep. And the price per ad was actually up, was up 6% year over year. So a lot more real estate, and the cost of the real estate went up slightly on the whole. What do you think about that, Hamish?
That's pretty interesting to see as well, because for both Google and Meta, really, there's been this kind of increase in impressions and a decrease in the price per ad because through short form. So for Meta, it's Reels. People spending more time on Reels. They're seeing more ads, but those ads are viewed, they're less effective. So there's the price per ad that advertisers are paying has been less than, say, news feed or something like that. But it is pretty fascinating now to see that. I wonder if this is the first quarter they've had both impressions and price per ad go up. Maybe not the first quarter, but certainly...
Possibly. I couldn't tell you, sorry.
Certainly that switch has happened either this quarter or in the last couple of quarters, which is fascinating to see.
Yeah. Yep, you're right. With the advertiser pullback, we were seeing, pressures in that area, but that seems to be reversing now.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to hear the kind of advertising stats with Google as well, especially around YouTube. Anyway, so all in all, not too much to complain about. Overall, I'd say just from the stats I told you, you'd say, okay, that's a pretty decent, there's some pretty decent results in there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to the conference call.
Uh-oh.
Well, it's not even... And honestly, I listened to that. Everyone's talking about Mark's opening remarks, and I listened to his opening statement. It's not actually that bad. It's really not. I think the problem that investors had is that so Meta investors, 98% of their business is ads, advertising.
Yeah.
And out of Mark's opening remarks, I would say 98% of his opening remarks were not about advertising.
Right.
So it's just like. The whole core of their business, he's just kind of like, you know, it's just, it is what it is. But anyway, here's all this other stuff that isn't making us any money, and we're putting a lot of money towards it, and we're burning a lot of cash, and now I'm going to talk to you about that.
Yeah.
Which is very Mark Zuckerberg. He just doesn't quite, I don't know, he doesn't, and Elon Musk is kind of the same, I guess. They don't quite get the whole, like, corporate, just toe the party line kind of vibe.
They just want to talk about what they're doing in the business, I guess, because
yeah.
Probably for the most part, their social media businesses are kind of, I mean, they're probably, you know, making some, they are making changes over time and tweaking things, but for the most part, it's kind of just a cash machine for Meta to now put money into basically Mark's projects, whether it's VR or AI, and that's really that's I guess that's why like you said, it's not, he doesn't have the corporate, you know, hat on. He just wants to talk about where he sees the company going and what he's clearly spending his time and where the money's going in the company. But Wall Street's like, wait a minute, just give us some great guidance for the next quarter and shut up.
Yeah. And that's exactly, he was basically saying about, the only thing he said about his ads business really is that they're just trying to make it more efficient. That's pretty much it. So I'll just blitz through some of the stuff that he did say on the conference call. Massive focus, obviously, on AI and everything Meta is doing there, because they recently, I don't know if you've seen it, Hamish, and or you guys at home have seen it, they recently released Meta AI, which you can probably see now in your Instagram, Facebook, and Messenger apps. Or alternative, you can just literally Google search Meta AI, and like ChatGPT, you can just go to the website and start using it. So that's now been released back, based on their Llama 3 platform that they've just put out. So they're very excited about that. Mark said he's very excited to be building creator and business AIs inside of this. This is thinking long term. This will come down the track, but they're starting to think about that, and they're starting to build these kind of these extra AI products that are very much in their infancy that they'll start to test out. He said the goal is to make the world's leading AI service in terms of quality and usage. So that's what they're doing. He noted that one of the cool features is that you can now create animations from still images. Okay, sure. What else did he say? He believes that Meta should invest more, that they will invest more and should invest more into this tech over the coming years. So he started talking about how he's excited to start scaling their CapEx, which is probably, like, as an investor, I don't know, you have to really have a strong case to sell to an investor. We're going to start scaling up our CapEx.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you know that number, that wait, you know that negative number?
Yeah, you know that free cash flow that you had this year? This is the reason why it's going to go down next year.
Yeah. You know that number that you care the most about? That like little profit figure at the bottom? Yeah, we're going to destroy that.
So funny. He then noted that Meta typically sees... Oh, this is the funny part. He noted that Meta typically sees a lot of stock volatility while they're investing in a new product but not monetizing it yet. It's funny because he was almost warning shareholders that this next layer of investment in their AI projects is basically in its infancy and it's going to take a long time before they kind of wear it up.
Yeah.
But he does, he says he expects to see a multi-year investment cycle before they've fully scaled Meta AI, business AI's, Meta AI and business AI's into the profitable services that he expects.
Yeah.
So, shareholder, I know you like your cash flow, but we've got a multi-year business cycle and we're going to scale our CapEx and sink all of that juicy profit into something that won't bear fruit for many years.
Yeah. Well, at least he's honest.
That's essentially what he's saying. Yeah.
At least he's honest.
You're right.
And the funny thing is, part of the reason why he can be honest is because he has the voting power in the company. Like, it's not like if he if someone else came out and said all of this, but they didn't have the voting power, the board would probably kick him out in like 2 weeks. Because the investors would get angry and then the board would be kind of, their hand would be forced. And it is actually just interesting to watch how, you know, when you have a company there that is owned, a large piece of it is owned by the CEO or the founder, they usually talk a little bit more freely because they don't feel that pressure. Like if investors don't like it, too bad.
This is what I'm doing.
You know, because most investors have that short-term viewpoint. So it's not as if you're going against your own investors. It's just most people just even most investors don't have that, you know, long-term mindset. They want money now. They want dividends. They want share repurchases. They don't want to wait. They don't want to speculate on some, you know, profits coming down the road.
Yep. This is how Mark sold it to investors. He said, building the leading AI will be a larger undertaking than the other experiences we've added to our apps, and this is likely to take several years. On the upside, once our new AI services reach scale, we have a strong history of being able to monetize them effectively.
That's true. Yeah.
In 5 years, you guys will be okay, but up until then, good luck.
Yeah.
Nah. I mean, it's fine. I think it's better him being honest about what he's planning to do. And, you know, he's right. The stuff that they've added into their apps, albeit it's been easier, say, stories or reels, like that stuff has been very effective. And they have eventually been able to monetize it. But he's kind of just saying that this is a much bigger task. And another interesting quick stat on how AI is already being incorporated into their business. He said that 30% of posts on Facebook are now shown by AI recommendations, and over 50% of the content on Instagram is now shown by AI.
Right. So, wow. There you go.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Don't have too much else to say, Hamish. He also spoke about the metaverse, but much less so. He's excited about AI glasses. He said that this is the ideal form factor for an AI assistant because they can see what you're seeing and hear what you're hearing. They're working with the top-end optics kind of glasses manufacturers to get their hardware into the top-selling designs. They're opening up the Meta Horizon operating system, so the operating system behind Meta Quest, so that they can accelerate some development from app developers. Apart from that, commented on Reels. Reels now makes up 50% of the time that people spend on Instagram, which is interesting.
Wow.
And Threads now has 150 million monthly active users.
How many was that? 150?
150 million.
Right, okay. Interesting. How does that compare to Twitter? Twitter has, what, like half a billion or something like that? Or
Yeah, maybe I can look it up. Think they had from last. I haven't looked this up in a while, but the last stat that I remember was about 350 million. But granted, that is an old number now. So I would assume they've grown it. I'm not sure. The number I quoted was before Elon Musk took over the app. So I'm not sure if it's grown or not. They probably. Yeah. Well, it'd be hard for us to know because it's private now. They wouldn't have to report it, and I don't think they would.
No, I think eMarketer is estimating they have 335 million. 335.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. And thanks, Mark. Your shares just tumbled 19. My shares just tumbled 19%.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic.
So thanks, Mark.
Yeah. Anyway, well,
so that's Meta.
It sounds like it's all happening at Meta. There wasn't actually all that much kind of qualitative commentary out of what Google's doing, but we'll do a bit of a compare and contrast on some of their numbers. And yeah, certainly, I mean, in a broad sense, similar to Meta, they're experiencing both strong top line growth and then through margins improving, this enormous increase in profits. So in a broad sense, the both of the giants are kind of experiencing the same thing. So for Q1, their revenue, Google's revenue came in, or Alphabet's revenue, I should say, came in at $80.5 billion, up 15.4% year over year. So pretty strong double-digit growth, not quite as good as Meta was able to achieve during the quarter. Of course, Google has the vast majority of their revenue is still coming from advertising, but they do have kind of other segments and all of their different kind of components. Google Search generated $46.2 billion in revenue, which was up 14% year over year. So still being able to grow Google Search revenue at a pretty considerable rate. I was looking for their cost per click and the number of impressions data, and I couldn't see it in their quarterly filing.
Maybe they just post it annually. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I did just have another look in case I missed it, but I don't believe it's there. So it might just be an annual figure for them for them now. So unfortunately, we can't do any comparing in that kind of that respect to Meta. So Google Search, $46.2 billion. YouTube ads came in at $8.1 billion, which is up 22%. Year over year, so massive increase in revenue through Google through YouTube ads, as I'm sure probably a lot of businesses move more of their television advertising budgets over to YouTube, which is kind of the good thing about YouTube. It's a fairly natural kind of transition for a lot of companies as compared to running other types of digital advertising. I always like to look up the trailing 12 months YouTube advertising, it came in at just under $33 billion. So with 55% of that being paid out to creators, which is, again, it's obviously an astounding market now, kind of in of itself.
Yeah, it's crazy. The creator economy is thriving, Hamish.
Yeah. Yes, it is. The next biggest segment is Google network advertising. So this is kind of the ad revenue they earn through kind of third-party websites and partnerships. It came in at $7.4 billion, which was flat year over year. They have their subscriptions, platforms, and devices segment came in at $8.7 billion, up 18% year over year. This includes kind of YouTube premium subscription. It includes their phones and a lot of like kind of the ancillary stuff, Google Play Store and that sort of thing. So $8.7 billion from that, which is massive. And then Google Cloud, which has been their fastest growing segment for quite some time now, came in at $9.6 billion, up 28% year over year, which that's, cloud, I mean, it's still growing at 30% a year, but it's pretty big now. It's already at $10 billion a quarter, which is crazy. It's crazy they're still growing that business. And it kind of gives, I think, an insight into probably how big cloud will be for Google, Amazon, and all of these companies over time.
I mean, it doesn't take a genius. If they can keep that growth rate up, as it has done over the last few years, really, then it won't be too long until this is a seriously, seriously impactful. I mean, it's still nowhere near Google Search. Google Search is $46.2 billion revenue, Cloud 9.6. But I guess already now, just looking at is their second largest second largest revenue segment. So yes. Yeah, it's that's crazy that it's crazy that it beats the others. Yeah, it's gonna be a big business.
Yeah, and so similar to Meta, they had pretty good revenue growth, and their cost growth was not as low as Meta, but lower than revenue. Traffic acquisition costs, which is kind of their main cost, actually about a third of traffic acquisition costs is just payments to creators on YouTube. So that's kind of where a large chunk of that money goes. But that came in at $12.9 billion. Which was up 10% year over year. So they were able to grow that at a lower rate than revenue. They also cut 10,000 employees over the last 12 months. So that's obviously contributed to some of the slower growth in their costs. Their operating margin expanded from 25% to 32%, and that drove operating income to $25.5 billion, which was a 47% year over year increase. And on a per share basis, earnings per share came in at $1.89, which was a 62% year over year increase. So,
It's not bad at all.
It's not bad turning a 15% revenue growth rate into 62% on the bottom line. yeah. It's not too bad.
Cost cutting, bearing fruits, impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, in terms of what are they doing with their profits? Where are they allocating capital within the business? So same as Meta, they're, you know, driving up CapEx. They actually doubled their capital expenditure to $12 billion during the quarter compared to just the previous quarter. And the CFO at Alphabet said that they investors should expect this level going forward. So they've basically doubled CapEx and said this is the level we're going to be at for quite some time. Same as Meta, I would imagine. They're putting all of it into new data centers and then chips for artificial intelligence. That's pretty much where all the CapEx is going at the moment for some of these big tech giants, building out their infrastructure, digital infrastructure and ability to handle these AI models.
And that will be a theme of the next company we talk about as well.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that is a very big theme of the Magnificent Seven, they're called.
Yeah, exactly. Good time to be a chip maker, that's for sure.
As NVIDIA shareholders are now
acutely aware.
They are acutely aware.
So CapEx doubled. They actually announced a dividend. Imagine that. Google's now paying a dividend.
I heard that. Crazy.
Look at that.
Sure.
Amazing. Yeah. So they're paying a 20-cent dividend for June this year, and then they obviously intend on paying that quarterly. First time that Alphabet has ever paid a dividend. And what other company announced a dividend recently? Was that Meta or was that... No, it wasn't Meta, I don't think.
No, the one I'm thinking of is Google. I don't know.
There was another company.
Another big name company that's announced a dividend? Yeah, surely not like Netflix or something.
No, it wasn't Netflix, I don't think. No.
Imagine that.
Would you
keep your stock? Would you keep your stock if Netflix just announced some fat dividend?
It depends how they're funding it.
debt.
Yeah, it's just debt. This is a dividend. Yeah, I might have to exit if they do that. Let's not do that.
Classic.
Of course, Alphabet continued with their very aggressive share repurchase program. They authorized another $70 billion in buybacks, and in the last couple of quarters, they've been doing $15 billion a quarter in repurchases. So that's where basically most of their cash is going. Most of their cash is going to buying their own stock. And then next it's data centers and chips. And then
it's giving it to NVIDIA or it's buying back their own stock.
Yeah, yeah. And then a little dividend is a little cherry on top of the cake as well. So so there you go.
Yeah, crazy. Very interesting. Yeah, similar themes through Tesla. Should I take you through Tesla?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking recently. So I had reduction in vehicle deliveries. 10% of staff getting laid off.
Yeah.
So we've had these kind of negative news headlines. Now we get to peek kind of behind the numbers, or into the numbers, I should say. So total revenue came in down 9% year over year to $21.3 billion. So automotive revenue was down 13% year over year to $17.4 billion. Their operating expenses were up 37% year over year. So operating income came down 56% year over year to just $1.2 billion. And their free cash flow, which is another important number, and it's a number that they actually post with these major financial statistics. Free cash flow for the quarter was negative $2.5 billion, so down from positive $2 billion of free cash flow last quarter and positive $441 million of free cash flow in Q1 of 2023. They said that was mainly due to the buildup in inventory. Thanks to the difference, remember there was that difference between the production and the deliveries. So they said that that's the main reason that free cash flow was down, because they hadn't obviously gotten those vehicles delivered. And also, surprise, surprise, their investments in AI. So we'll talk about that. They interestingly did not list, you remember we were talking about like whether they'd actually come out and say, oh, demand's a bit of an issue because of the macroeconomic environment. They did not list demand as an issue. They instead noted the decline in revenues was attributable to reduced vehicle selling price, and due to a decline in vehicle deliveries, partially due to the Model 3 update and Giga Berlin disruptions. So the first bit, this is typically what Tesla does. A lot of the EV manufacturers of the world, their whole EV programs are actually not profitable. So every EV they sell, they make a loss, which is kind of crazy. And Elon even noted that a lot of manufacturers are feeling the crunch right now, and they're actually pulling back on their EV plans and favoring hybrids instead. So interesting strats, but Tesla is essentially, they have been able to show that their EV manufacturing and sales, that is sustainably profitable. So Elon is he's much more inclined to lower the price of their product to stimulate extra demand than to keep prices as they are and just sell fewer cars.
Yeah.
So there's been a bit of that going on. But they do also note that the decline in vehicle deliveries was partially a result of the Model 3 update and the Gigafactory disruptions in Berlin, leading us to assume that there are factors that they didn't mention. Potentially one of those factors might have been fewer sales due to the macroeconomic environment. But yeah. Honestly, they didn't state that. But they were very careful in which words they chose to put forward.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess we'll just find out, right? Like, I mean, there's only so much they can not talk about it. I mean, if the last year over year, exactly, the last year over year delivery numbers are a little shaky. If the next year is worse, or even just continues to be negative, there's going to be very little ability of them to hide behind, you know, Giga Berlin disruptions or something like that. Or maybe it really is just a one kind of year, you know, blip. But we'll see. We'll just have to see it. All I was going to say is I would be surprised if macro wasn't a problem at the moment with higher rates, cost of living crisis. You know, buying an electric vehicle isn't exactly an essential purchase. I would be shocked if that didn't impact their demand in a meaningful way. And I don't think it means anything about Tesla's business and their, you know, like whether they're a good business or not. I think it's completely out of control, but I would be shocked if that's not playing a role.
In fairness, I did listen through the first half of the earnings call, and the CFO did note in their remarks that the macroeconomic conditions did play a role in the results.
Right.
So, but they didn't talk about
it. They didn't
more than that.
Yeah, expand on it.
Yeah. Yep. They also note the drop in profitability was due to investments driven by AI, cell advancements, and other R&D projects. So, and also the cost of the Cybertruck ramp. But importantly, and this will be a theme of the conference call stuff I'll talk about, it's all about AI. It's all about AI. What did they say? Well, out of the shareholder, out of the earnings release, I should say, they said, since the launch of FSD supervised V12 earlier this year, it has become clear that this architecture long pursued by Tesla is the right solution for scalable autonomy. So they got FSD V12 out, and they are very, very bullish on where FSD is at right now. This is the one where it's end-to-end neural nets, and people are responding very positively to it. And inside the company, they really the message is really one of positivity. What else did they say? In Q1, we completed the transition to hardware 4.0, so that's the camera systems that they put in their cars. Our latest in-vehicle computer with increased inference processing power and improved cameras. Yes, so FSD 12 was pushed out to 1.8 million vehicles, and they've had 50% of people trying it, which is pretty cool. They also reduced the FSD subscription price now to $99 per month to try and get more people in the door. And interestingly, the robo-taxi, they are now calling it the cyber cab, and they are going to show us the cyber cab, Hamish, in August. They're going to show
okay.
us.
August 2030. What?
Yeah. No, they're going to show. This is the stuff that took investors by surprise. Is what they said.
Cyber cab. Terrible. Can we just? I know robo-taxi. You don't
like
probably,
it. I like it.
Well, I know robo-taxi is probably dead because it. You know, he said it so much and it didn't happen for so long. But robo-taxi is better. Robo-taxi is better.
You like robo-taxi? Yeah. Fair enough. The cyber cab. you've derailed me, Hamish. So Elon, he was talking about this a lot on the conference call, end-to-end neural nets. He basically said, if you're a shareholder in Tesla right now, you are betting on Tesla being first to FSD and building out the robo-taxi, which they already have. They're already working on the app, the robo-taxi app. And, actually they say in early, could be as early as 2025, they will start to, produce the cheaper car, the robo-taxi, the $25,000 car, whatever you want to call it. So he said that these new vehicles will use aspects of the current platform and also their next generation platform, and will be able to be manufactured on Tesla's current production line. So they won't need to invest in a massive new factory before they get this new car underway, which will be interesting. They also noted that they installed and commissioned, meaning that it's working. They installed and commissioned 35,000 H100 computers, AI computers from NVIDIA. And they expect that to be 85,000 by the end of the year. And this is for training their AI models. So it's all happening in terms of AI. So there's a lot of just AI, FSD, 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 robotaxi.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine that all this AI stuff isn't going to end in another tech bubble. Like, maybe it's not right now. Like, obviously, you know, NVIDIA's surged, but it has been backed up by, like, well, 300% increase in sales or something insane like that, right? Their profits have absolutely gone through the roof. But it's hard to imagine. Like, it just feels very much like, I don't know. It feels like snowball's tech rolling. Bubble-ish. You know, it feels like, you know, every company is doing everything they can to just push as much of it as possible. Which is, you know, obviously great for the technology, but it I don't know. I'm getting the feeling that we're starting to head down a tech bubble path. But who knows?
And that's not to say that AI won't be a big technology of the future.
No,
It's like the tech bubble was around the internet, and the internet was arguably the biggest thing since sliced bread, Hamish.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It wasn't a fad, as some people thought
it was.
No, it
wasn't a fad at all. So even if AI is, you're going like, oh my God, I can't stop hearing about AI, blah, 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 get on with it. AI itself could be very successful, but... Yeah. The euphoria that causes in equity investors and the speculation and the meteoric price rises of some companies based on AI, it's worrying because there's only so long it can be sustained before the revenues don't really rise and the profits don't really rise and people kind of wake up and they're like, oh, I guess it's not really going to be that big of a player.
We'll see. We haven't seen any Yahoos yet. We haven't seen any thousand, you know, the stock price is 1,000 times revenue. So we're not there yet. Like, we haven't got Yahoo valued at $100 billion, with basically no revenue. So we're not. I don't think we're at that yet. But it would be interesting to see.
It's a hard thing to judge because a lot of the companies that talk about AI are the Magnificent Seven, right?
Yeah.
But pretty much all of the Magnificent Seven have really, really profitable businesses already. So it's kind of like the cherry on top. So it's kind of hard to like judge.
That's a good point.
Where the AI premium is, but you know.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I guess you can if you just do a standard. Sorry, yeah.
All I was gonna say was with companies like Yahoo, right? Like they're completely unprofitable, shockingly overvalued. And all of the money funding their operations was coming from investors, right? Whereas with the Magnificent Seven, we don't really know whether they're going to make money out of some of these AI models. But it's that their AI business isn't a separate stock, where like you said, it's not listed as a separate stock. So they're just using these cash machines that they've already got, these advertising cash machines, and just pummeling that money into it. So it's going to be, you know, maybe in this case, it's more of a question of, do these companies just waste a bunch of money and don't get it back on AI, rather than it being, you know, a new company, a new stock, a new AI stock that ends up just, you know, burning out? It could be just, oh, well, you know, in 10 years, Meta realizes they just burned $100 billion on something that's not going to make them any money, you know, or not make them back that much money, which is an interesting aspect of it.
Yeah, definitely. What else was I talking about, Hamish? Who knows? So yes, AI. Got it. Artificial intelligence, the way of the future. Buy my stock. Yeah. Here's the other one. Here's the other pipe dream you love hearing about, Hamish. The Optimus robot. You love it.
Yeah.
Dude, you're going to buy one.
I will buy one. I do. I want one. Yeah.
Yep. Once you've burnt your whole 20s saying, nah, I don't want a girlfriend, and you get into your late 30s and you've gained a little weight and you can't find a girl anymore, you're going to be buying that Optimus robot and sticking a wig on it, I tell you.
Exactly right. So is it ready yet?
It's coming, Hamish. It's coming. They said it's currently doing simple factory-based tasks, but it's in the lab. It's not in the factory yet. They said they hope to have limited production in the factory and working in the factory before the end of this year. And Elon was saying they may be able to sell it externally by the end of next year, but it's just a fun little passion project at the moment.
Yeah.
I should clarify, it's a fun little passion project for now, but he definitely does think this is going to be a massive business for Tesla. He says that he thinks Optimus will be more important than the rest of their businesses combined. So, and then he goes on to his spiel about, well, what even is an economy, you know? So he's literally sold himself. He does think this is going to change the shape of the economy. So,
yeah.
I mean, that'd be cool because although then humanity might not last much longer, but I don't know. We'll see if it can be adequately controlled.
That is an interesting future to think about, but it's probably quite far away. So, you know, you got to add a 10x multiple to whatever Musk's timelines are. So, you know, if he said if he's going to sell it next year, we'll see it in 2034, I think.
I wish I could argue with you there, Hamish, but I can't. But anyway, there's Tesla's earnings and a little bit of the conference call stuff. There's just so much going on, so much to talk about. I find it interesting. But anyway, let's talk about arguably the most innovative business of 2024. What was your segue going to be?
Yeah, I was going to say, forget like AI. That's like the second most important technology that we're working on at the moment. The most important is the Chipotle.
Let's go. Chipotle. I haven't heard much about Chipotle.
Yeah, anyone who started listening to the podcast in the last like year and a half is probably like, what are you talking about?
What are they talking about? Yeah.
But
what did they say? I don't even know what happened to the Chipotle. We just kind of forgot about it, didn't we?
No, yeah, we were doing so this started like, this must have been like 3 years ago or something, when they started putting in drive-thrus into their Chipotle restaurants, and they called them Chipotlanes, and we just thought that was so stupid. So we started tracking it every quarter. Because it's just funny to think of like the board meeting where like they, you know, someone came in and presented all these different names because they had to have some cool name. They couldn't just call it a drive-thru. Do they call it a drive-thru in the US, or do they have like a different name for it?
No, I reckon it'd be the drive-thru. Like Macca's drive-thru. Oh, they don't even say Macca's. The McDonald's drive-thru.
But no, they couldn't have that. They had to have their own branded thing.
The Chipotle.
So it's the Chipotle. Yeah.
Trademark. We have to pay them a royalty every time we say it.
We should be getting paid. How much promo are we doing for them?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Gosh, yeah, we should be getting paid.
To our Australian audience and all of the Chipotles that are in Australia.
Yeah.
Zero. So anyway, they reported their they reported their quarterly results, I thought we'd talk about it because it's one of those few restaurant chains that has just been doing absolutely astronomically good, despite the rest of the industry really having quite a tough time with inflation in particular and costs rising. Revenue came in at $2.7 billion for the quarter, which was up 14.7% year over year. Primarily, that was driven by comparable sales growth of 7%. So it's an increase in sales for their existing restaurants, excluding kind of new restaurants. They had a 5.4% increase in the number of transactions, so more people coming through the door, and a 1.6% increase in the average check size. Either people ordering more, but mostly it's price increases that drive the average check size. They've actually pushed 6 price increases since 2021 with pretty much no resistance. They've been growing sales at their stores at high single digits, sometimes double digits, pretty much every year. So they've been able to really kind of ratchet up their prices without any resistance. But most importantly, they also opened 47 new locations with 43 Chipotlanes. So they can add 43 Chipotlanes to the to the stack. That's
very important, Hamish. Very important.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you have Elon Musk on a conference call talking about like cars driving themselves and when that's going to hit the road, and then you just have like the Chipotle CEO, which is like, how many drive throughs did we put in this year?
It's quite a different pace.
It is quite a different pace. But hey, it works. That's one of the cool things about public companies. There's a lot of different variations. There's a lot of different businesses out there.
Yeah.
It's what keeps it interesting, Hamish.
Yeah. And I mean, Chipotle is a great example of, you know, you don't need to invest in these complex, crazy, futuristic businesses to do well. I mean, Chipotle is one of the best performing stocks for a very long time. You know, they're growing at an enormous rate at the moment, as we'll kind of get to when we get to profitability. But their operating margin expanded to 16.3% from 15.5%. And at the restaurant level, it's even better. Their operating margin at the restaurant level was 27.5%, which was 190 basis point increase. So their margin increased by 2 whole percentage points, which is crazy because most restaurants are getting absolutely crushed by increased food costs at the moment.
There you go.
So they've got during the quarter, they had beef, produce, other food costs, and labor all increased in a reasonable way. But they were able to offset all of those increases with higher price increases, which is a testament to their brand and how much people how strong their customer base is.
There you go.
And so on a profitability basis, earnings per share came in at $13.01, which was a 24% year-over-year increase. So pretty crazy increase for just a little restaurant chain. Well, not so little, but
not so little anymore, Hamish.
No, they're actually opening 300 new restaurants this year, and 80% of them will have a Chipotlane. So
good, smart.
Yeah.
1 out of 100, that's what I say. 1 out of 100% Chipotle.
Yeah, yeah. Dream big, yeah.
Why not 110%? Some of them should have 2.
They should just build Chipotlanes. That's what we said last time, I think. Last time we spoke about it. They don't even need the restaurant. Just put the lane in.
Just put the lane. That's enough. That'll sell people. Just drive through. There's a boom gate at the start and you just tap your card and the boom gate goes up and then you get to go through the lane.
Yeah. You read out something off the board. Yeah, you swipe your card and that's it. It's just all about the experience. Yeah, it is. Yeah, you just pay for the experience. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. It's like playing The Sims, you know? It's just all simulation.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd love to play. You could live your own life, but why would you want to do that when you can just live a virtual character's life instead?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well,
yep.
There you go, Hamish. I don't know where this podcast is taking a turn. This always happens when we record in the afternoons. Never record in the afternoon.
No,
it's almost 4 p.m. This is the afternoon nap time. This is when we all start falling asleep.
We better
bounce out of here. Is that all we've got to talk about for Chipotle?
That is all we've got. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Hopefully you enjoyed listening to some of our coverage of some of the earnings this week and
our ramblings
and our ramblings as the episode went on. I guess we'll probably continue to do some earnings next week. So as I said, we'll be probably recording from Omaha. We will be recording the next episode from Omaha. Yeah. So we'll probably talk a little bit about the meeting and then maybe we'll cover whatever, if there's some kind of news going on. Feel free to let us know if you want us to cover anything or answer any questions maybe you specifically have around the Berkshire meeting. Feel free to head over to the YouTube version of the podcast and just click on one of the episodes and leave your questions or comments as a comment and we can kind of see all of those there. Thanks, Brandon, for joining me as always. And we'll be back. As I said, next time we are doing this, we'll be in the United States. So
let's go.
We'll see you guys then. See you later, guys.
We'll see you there. Mm-hmm.